You're listening to Eureka on Monocle 24, brought to you by the team behind The Entrepreneurs. The Aperitivo Rosso might be one of the most popular drinks on the market, but it's a sector dominated by big brands, namely Campari and Aperol. In 2015, a group of five friends from across Toronto's food and drink sector decided to create their own small batch iteration of the drink. Capo Capo was born following an excursion to Trento in northern Italy, and a masterclass in making the spirit by one of the Capoletti family, which has been making spirits for more than a century. Here, three of Capo Capo's founders, the wine merchant Joel Clark, the cocktail maker Owen Walker, and the designer Ditti Catona, explain the story behind their delightful tipple.
To start, I sort of run a business that is a wine and spirits distribution business, and sort of was interested in the idea when it was brought to my attention from one of my good clients that, you know, there really isn't much in the market with regards to aperitivo and aperitivo culture in North America, but even globally. I mean, there's a pretty relatively untapped market segment. That was kind of the initial spawn of the idea that would then become Capo Capo Aperitivo.
So Aperol and Campari are definitely the juggernauts of the industry, and they have very distinctive profiles and flavors, and which I'm a lover of both. But it felt like potentially there was a stopgap in the market for something that kind of fell within the two of them. Capo Capo, we focused on something that was herbal and vegetal, maybe a little less of the bright citrus C plus notes that you find in Aperol, but not quite as bitter and herbally dense as Campari, as well as alcohol content factoring in there as well. We kind of wanted to position ourselves in that middle segment.
We had very limited resources, so I mean, we just basically had to stretch what little money we had. I mean, of course, shipping samples and things back and forth when coming up with the product description and putting together the formula and stuff. I mean, that does cost a little bit of money, but certainly I think the kind of idea also behind, you know, enlisting the help of Didi in the design world, Owen in the restaurateur and being in the sort of mixology camp, I think it was more about pooling our own personal knowledge amongst the team. And we've got two other people. One of them is an Italian, so he was our translator at all times between us and the distillery, who don't speak any English. So he's been an extremely integral part of our team as well, and Cassandra in the sales side of thing, I think. So we were able to kind of pull together more of our personal capital rather than actual monetary capital to get this all kind of started.
When you're small, something that I've always believed in, you just have to be louder. So whatever you put out, if all you have is your bottle, you have to be distinctive in any way you can. But it is historically based in the typographic treatment of it is based on Italian posters and Italian signage. I wanted to cover the whole bottle to make it really obvious that we're there. And at the same time, it's very, very cost effective. Like I said, in production, it's simple, but otherwise it's very complicated and very thought out. The story, the website, how we approached even the imagery. Yeah, our budget was, I mean, in the real scale of things, if you're launching a new product, our budget was like next to nothing. But there was enough there, so it really was about pooling expertise and really understanding the brand and making that story as clear as possible, but still making it beautiful and not look like you're just starting. And we want it to look established. It was very important because I think the product is that good. It's not like it's a trial and error product. It's a great product. So the bottle and the design and everything else, the website and has to stand up to that.
We started bringing the product in exclusively in Ontario because we're based here and because I have a distribution network here already, and it's a no-brainer for this to be our start market. It was a place where we could use, again, on a budget, our sort of personal relationships in the industry and our own knowledge, rather than having to hire a big sales force or anything like that. It was a relatively interesting market to kind of test the product and sort of really make mistakes. Certainly, we made lots of them when we started. When we started this project, we always had aspirations to go into the international market. and to really build this brand much further and beyond just our own locale. So it was a lot of just working to get the initial product out to the people, to the masses, whilst making, you know, mistakes, but making them in a smaller way. Because I think if you try to grow too quickly, a lot of times those little mistakes that you make will be magnified in a big way. We definitely focused for the first little while on restaurants, bars, as we think, as in most markets, they're the people sort of pushing the trends and that are going to help sort of bring a lot of these products to the kind of mainstream market. But they're the ones sort of pushing boundaries, or they're on the sort of forefront of the spirits trends. So I think the support of the local bars, restaurants, and on trade were, it was extremely sort of vital to our success. Year three, signed a deal with the LCBO to do a summer seasonal release of the product, which in our monopolized market allows us retail distribution. LCBO has 1,000 stores throughout Ontario. So they started us out in 150 stores, which is just great, but also gives us more access to the general public, which is extremely important for any brand because they can buy individual bottles in retail. So it was a real kind of shift for us to go from selling direct to bars and restaurants over to licensees. And certainly that came with a certain amount of struggle, and there was definitely a learning curve for that.
We definitely had conversations at early onset about means of producing additional products that made sense within our brand, made sense within the culture, whether it's different means of consuming Capo Capo, the methodology, is it a canned product? Are we producing a vermouth? Are we producing another style of Amari, something more bitter, something wine-based? Lots of these conversations were definitely had, and it is a goal and aspiration of ours, absolutely, to continue to try and strengthen and grow the brand by producing interesting products.
So, you know, our production for a year is probably about 2,000 cases right now. I think we could do much more than that. I think we would have done much more than that had things kind of worked out a bit differently this year. Some, we had a few setbacks, as any new brand does, during our summer season this year, so we sort of missed out on some good sales this summer season. But you know, the mistakes that were made and the issues we ran into here, now we're pretty seamlessly moving into Quebec. We just finished our first order for the SAQ, another good sort of high volume buyer. Australia has been a great little market for us, just a good place to get a little bit more traction, a little bit more visibility for the brand. We actually just signed a contract today, a distribution contract for the United States in about 20 states. So that for us will be another big jump in both production and in sales for us. So I think we are definitely still very kind of small and grassroots at the moment. There's, you know, very good opportunity on the horizon.
Thanks very much to the team for coming in and sharing their story and the story behind Capo Capo. This show was produced by Thomas Lewis and Gaia Lutz and was edited by Kieran Matthew Banerjee. I'm Matt Alagaya. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.